for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
And good evening. Welcome back after a week off. Welcome back to the listeners. Welcome back to Derek Kramer. Welcome back to Ben Tsujimoto from the Buffalo News Soccer Blog.
It's good to be back.
I'd like to welcome myself back to this.
I can welcome you back if you want.
Please, hold on. Let's start over. Go ahead.
Welcome back,
Nick. Oh, thanks, Ben.
Welcome back, Nick Mandola.
It's been 3 weeks for me.
You get two welcome backs, me and Derek.
Yeah, double the welcome.
Spoiled.
All the backs. So it's good that we're starting off lighthearted. Because there's a lot of stuff to be angry about.
I was going to say, do you have any really like demoralizing news to pass?
Oh no, I'm ready to fly. I'm ready to fly high on the wings of sarcasm. And as I was really surprised I hadn't heard this phrase before, but I was writing about the men's national team, and I used the phrase "snark infested waters." I was a little surprised like that hasn't been thrown out there before.
Has it caught on?
Yeah.
Did you Google it before you used it?
No, I should have. I'm sure someone has said that. It seems a little too easy.
I mean, you are clever, Nick, but there are other clever people.
I've heard rumors of other people's cleverness. So we have a really cool show today. We're going to have Sean Burke on a little later, the UB women's soccer coach. They just went over to Spain, played a couple of games. I know they drew, I want to say it was either Valencia or Villarreal. So good news for them.
I believe it was Villarreal.
Tells you something about the dominance of American soccer, by the way, that could happen. But that'll be something we'll talk about with Sean. And Rudy Pompert's going to be on. Very interesting, really a perfect guest, not just because the Dutchman went home and took his, I believe the U-12s of the Delaware Soccer Club over to Peck Zwolle. They have a great relationship between those two clubs. But also because I believe he was there when his idol, and many people's idol, Johan Cruyff, died.
It's true.
So he'll surely be able to speak on that. But we begin in a very sensitive place for United States soccer fans, and that's because the United States lost to Guatemala on Friday. Normally, not a big deal to lose a game against a bad team. It's usually a little embarrassing, but this game puts their World Cup hopes in precarious position one round before they're usually in a precarious position. The first time they've lost to Guatemala in 21 years.
Yeah.
The first time that Guatemala has beaten the U.S. in World Cup qualifying period. That's not good. And if the States cannot beat Guatemala, and we're talking that losses obviously are bad, but a draw won't even really do them well tomorrow night, they are likely out of the 2018 World Cup.
I know. It's kind of freakish to think about.
It is.
Even before they get to the hex, they're really making their lives difficult. And
they've been incredibly bad.
Yeah, it's frustrating to see. And it's I've just read a lot, and it's been very depressing to read all the anti-Jurgen Klinsmann and just the realistic idea that he's not going to be fired. You know, like it would make less sense for him to be fired now and like completely blow things up, because it would just, you're right in the middle of the cycle, you know. So
if they lose tomorrow, I think he'll get fired.
Because there would be no point.
They won't go to the World Cup.
Right.
Yep. That's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Friday was embarrassing. I know you kept more of an eye on the Olympic game, you said?
Yeah, I watched the Olympic game actually almost twice.
And we'll talk about that, because I enjoyed that for different reasons, not just because the States were able to wrangle an advantage out of it, really against all odds, but so they go and play Guatemala, and as you know, I haven't been sold on Jurgen Klinsmann, but I also haven't been one of his detractors. I was a detractor on Friday. I can't believe the way they lined up. And he has this kind of knack for making the right adjustments, as if to say, wow, I've experimented for 45 minutes in a horrible, horrible fashion. Mm-hmm. So it was better by the end of the game, but came out in an awful spot, started Michael Orozco. Let's go real quickly through this. They lose 2-0. He starts Michael Orozco at center back with Omar Gonzalez. Orozco has not played for his club in 3 months, I believe.
In your NBC Sports content, I saw a lot of that fact. That fact kept on popping up over and over.
It's shocking. Yeah. Even in the fact that he was called up is shocking, but he's chosen over Steve Birnbaum, mm-hmm. who's played pretty well. John Anthony, now it is important to point out they had two center backs that had to go home.
Yep.
John Anthony Brooks has been fantastic for Hertha Berlin. And Matt Beisler picked up a knock, as
concussion,
they like to say.
Concussion, right? Yeah. There was talks of his concussion.
Literally got knocked on the head.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah. So they had to make the, but they had Jeff Cameron there, and they play him at right back.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, he plays some right back in a pinch for Stoke City. But yeah, not when you're down center backs. Then they take the normal right back, DeAndre Yedlin, who plays right back for his club, Sunderland, and they move him up to right mid, which is mostly curious because that's where Alba Doya likes to play. Mm-hmm. So they put him on the other side of the pitch. Then Klinsmann takes Mix Diskerud, a center attacking mid who at best maybe plays a little deeper, like around actual midfield, and they play him at center defensive mid, moving Michael Bradley up to the 10. Not really the 10. I'm sorry. You get the idea. Attacking mid, let's call it that. So they've got four players playing out of position, a goalkeeper who hasn't played in a long time, though I don't begrudge them because Guzan's been pretty poor for Aston Villa, so start Tim Howard. And a couple of a center back who just doesn't play, and they just get dominated for 45 minutes. High pressing crushes them. The first goal is Mix Diskerud falling down and no one on the near post. And I'll be honest with you, I realize that it happens at times that you don't mark the near and back post on a corner by design. I don't understand it in this circumstance.
I think Mix should start doing some upper body workouts too, because he got annihilated off the ball, you know, and it was completely legal, and he just kind of was down, and it was a free header, and he's
kind of top heavy with his hair, maybe. It's taking him down to the ground.
He does have heavy curls.
So that was incredibly frustrating. The goal where Ruiz is literally just, I know he's 36, but he scored something like 48 international goals.
El Pescadito, yeah.
Yeah, and Orozco has no idea he's there. Yeah. And Gonzalez is not going to catch him. He looked out of sorts the whole night. So, not the whole night, for the first 45 minutes. Once Cameron got in there, imagine a veteran center back who plays that position in the Premier League, also plays holding mid for times for Stoke. So very comfortable in the center of the park. Oddly enough, once he moved him in, the states were a lot better. Once they dropped Yedlin back to right back, the states were a lot better. But it was too late to come back from that 2-0 deficit.
And I don't disagree with those arguments about the Jurgen putting players in the wrong positions. I also think his player selection is very dubious too. I don't think Mix Diskerud should be in the squad anymore.
No,
I have wonders about Yedlin even starting. I think Yedlin brings most value as a substitute. Maybe the last 20-25, and given whatever the stage is in that game, he can be an outside back, he can be an outside midfielder. It matters less at those points when he's not playing 70 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
I think Darlington Nagby is getting to the point now where he's a good enough two-way midfielder where...
Be shocked if he doesn't start tomorrow.
Yeah, he absolutely should start. And I know it's funny that with no Jermaine Jones available in this one that, you know, he just... Jurgen just seems clueless when he doesn't have Jermaine Jones there to plop into that number six role. So it probably doesn't shock you that Mix Diskerud goes there, because I'm sure Jurgen was just in a panic and was just like, I don't know. Let's pick this guy.
But where's Perry Kitchen? I mean, I know literally where he is. He's in Scotland.
Yeah.
He plays for Hearts. Mm-hmm. But Perry Kitchen doesn't get a call. There's another guy that I'm totally blanking on now. And I was very frustrated.
Danny Williams, right?
Danny Williams. Mm-hmm. You know, even bring in I'll throw in a crazy name, an MLS name, a Chris Pontius or someone else to slide Bradley back into that spot, where I think you may see Bradley play tomorrow. But
Dax McCarty is another guy.
Great example. I don't know what he's done to... Anger.
Yeah.
But this is the problem I have. So here's the issue with Yedlin, and real quick, this is getting a little too micro too early in the show.
Yeah, that's all right.
But these are the outside backs that I consider, just doing some minor research, and I wrote it up at Pro Soccer Talk, that did not get the call. Justin Morrow from Toronto, Chris Tierney, Robbie Rogers, Breck Shea, Michael Parkhurst, Sean Franklin, Tony Beltran, Raymond Gattis, Chance Myers. So the United States, and I would have, to be honest with you, at this point, I'm interested in seeing one of them.
Yeah.
But before the game, I would have thought, why not play Yedlin at right back? Mm-hmm. It's not a position they're deep in.
No, it's not. And like, none of those players that you mentioned are world-class players.
No.
And none of them...
Parkhurst has done a job at the level before.
Yeah, but this is past Parkhurst's
prime. A little
long
in the tooth,
you know? Yeah, if that's a good way of putting it.
His teeth are etched into the floor.
He's like a wolf, yeah. No, it's tough, and those positions have historically been weak, you know, ever since Steve Cherundolo, and I know we like to mention him quite a bit on the show, but...
I'll throw a bone to Beasley.
Yeah, Beasley, and we thought Timmy Chandler was going to be the savior of that position. We thought Jonathan Spector was. We thought Eric Lehigh was.
Both of those guys, I think, are interesting discussions, even in their late 20s.
Yeah.
Lehigh plays week in, week out for Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
And we've talked about how the English Championship might be above the level, or at least at the level of MLS.
Mm-hmm.
Spectre still plays. I think actually he's recently dropped out of the mix at Birmingham. Plays all the time.
Yeah.
So for me, that's still very troublesome because he encourages the players to go to Europe and doesn't like the look. Even Tim Ream, who's a center back, has deputized at right back and, mm-hmm. and isn't getting the call, and he's over at Fulham. So I think this is the first time, and this brings us to the macro point, what Klinsmann said today. I wrote it up at NBC Sports, prosoccertalk.nbcsports.com, and that's this. He says none of his players were playing out of position. And that
I know, I saw that.
That is funny. Where we cross into the line of...
He's delusional.
You're past the point. You've gone from eccentric to delusional.
He's selling his California home, too. What does that mean?
Yeah. I got that text from a friend immediately after the game, and apparently it was a few days beforehand. It might just mean he's moving to a different California home.
Could be. Maybe he likes Bakersfield.
Well, his son's also going to college now, too, so he has a little more freedom to roam. Mm-hmm. His son is going to, I would say, Cal.
That's Jonathan Klinsmann, right? The goalkeeper?
Yep. So I just... When you say that crosses the line into delusional. And at this point in time, you got to go with the date that brought you on Tuesday. Even if they win, I would still be tempted to say, look, you've done a pretty decent job as technical director. The youth game has grown. He's a good player recruiter because... 4 years from now, we'll know for sure.
Yeah.
But even getting the commitments of a ZLM, of a Julian Green, and having exclusive looks to them over their development. Green not playing a ton right now, but still in demand by, I think, AC Milan is reportedly chasing him for this summer.
We got to talk about Pulisic here too, right?
What's that?
We have to talk about Christian Pulisic here too.
Oh, sure. I thought you, Tony Pulis. I thought we were going to,
or
like, no,
Tony Pulis, no, yeah. Rather, that's probably irrelevant.
If he became the United States coach, I might move to Canada.
The
equivalent of a bad presidential candidate.
He might make the US MNT great again, though.
So. Oh, brother. So, no, Pulisic, very interesting. I think if we are to look forward to tomorrow, and I think maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show, because we can also talk about the Olympic qualifier tomorrow.
Yeah.
A big day for US soccer. I think bringing him in, he's definitely going to play just so they get him cap tied to the team.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he'll start, but he'll.
Well, I'm not expecting him to start.
He'll get into the
but
team.
I think he'll have an opportunity to make a difference.
For sure. I think Graham Zusi, as much as I'm not a huge fan of his, will make a difference tomorrow because he's a player who's comfortable, who can play on the left and the right.
He hasn't been called in quite a while, right? He became an afterthought fouling the World Cup, maybe?
He was called in for Klinsmann's had a very short leash with him.
Yeah.
So he was called up he was called up for 8 games last year during the Gold Cup run, but only played in 4. Had 2 assists in the World Cup, but those were the only 4 games he played in 2014. So he went from an 11-outing guy, so something's happened between him and Klinsmann. But here's a guy who's calm, who's not going to be freaked out. Again, they should win tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't even – now, Guatemala looked pretty decent, but they absolutely should win that game tomorrow. Regardless, you don't go 21 years without losing to a team that's significantly smaller than you, with less of a reputation, and then lose to them on the road in a game, let's face it, Clint Dempsey misses an absolute you-have-to-make-it goal set up by Nagby and Bobby Wood. Somebody hit the post. Jordan, no, that was the Olympic qualifier.
Yeah.
Somebody else hit the post. There were a lot of missed chances in that game. Altidore came on and looked pretty decent in a short period of time. So, and you're not going to give up. Both of those goals that they gave up were just, they weren't even, well, applaud the other team.
Yeah.
They were bad goals.
I'm less confident. And granted, you studied this last U.S. game against Guatemala a lot more than I did. But just looking at the surface level that Guatemala knows now that it can beat the U.S., it's going to be the same squad. They got good roster news today in that Carlos Ruiz will be able to play.
Oh, he did go.
Yeah,
okay,
he will be able to play. So, I mean, does the soil make a whole lot of difference? I mean, it does, but is it enough? The U.S. is right now in a desperate situation, and in a lot of cases, I don't know if desperation brings the best out of the U.S. I think it more leads to panic. It more leads to situations like we saw on Tuesday, where it's just like, what are you thinking? Like, and player choice even, like, it's not going to be a whole lot different for the U.S., is it? I mean, it's going to be the same people.
Well, again, I think I look through the traditional stats, which don't always tell you a lot. They were outshot by 2 on the road against Guatemala. The possession was 50-50. The fouls were about even. The passing percentages were about even. So all things considered, it probably really wasn't a 2-0 game. Mm-hmm. Maybe, again, the only reason I gave Tim Howard less of a rating than I would have liked to, because I'm used to seeing him make one of those saves. Mm-hmm. I think both of those are understandable. I mean, if there's a guy, that ball, the first goal bounds into the near post, or, well, I guess it was coming from across. Yeah, oh. It's near post.
Yep.
It's bounced at such a slow pace that if anyone's standing there, they might have trapped it and dribbled it out of the box. So, again, I'm confident just because of history. The United States is a much better team, has much more talent than Guatemala, I'll put it that way. That said, if I'm Walter, totally blanking on his name, and I've written it 100 times, but their coach of Guatemala, I might consider not doing that high press that was so successful. And I might just want to play for the draw, because the draw puts the U.S. in just as bad of a situation. They would come out of their first 4 games of qualifying with a win, 2 draws, and a loss. And Trinidad it'll be shocking if they lose to St. Vincent at home. It would be 10 times the shock that it was the U.S. losing at Guatemala. So that's going to happen. What you'd like to see is the United States win. They're going to be in, I don't want to say the driver's seat, but they'll be in the driver's seat to finish second.
The U.S. isn't mathematically eliminated by losing this match, right?
No, but they would need Guatemala to beat Trinidad. And, well, if they lose this match, they would need Guatemala to beat Trinidad.
And wouldn't Grenadines have to do something bizarre, too?
No. Okay, no, they wouldn't.
Because they probably won't.
Well, right now, we'll be quick with the numbers, because I know that that's tricky, and Rudy's going to be calling in any minute. But assuming, of course, Trinidad beats the Grenadines as well on Tuesday, you would see them with 10 points. If the U.S. lost, Guatemala would have 9 points, and the States would still have 4. Yeah, so you would need to make up. You would need to beat Trinidad in the last game, and have Trinidad and Guatemala tie and beat St. Vincent by more than Guatemala beat St. Vincent. It's not undoable.
Yeah, but you obviously don't want to get in that situation.
Sure, and I also don't think Guatemala is going to necessarily tie Trinidad. Yeah. I think it's not good. They need to win tomorrow. And I think they will. But again, I'm basing it on history, not my feeling. My feeling is terrified. From 7 o'clock until about 11:30, they may ruin 2 of 4 summers for me. Because if the States can't get a result in the Olympic game, which is at 9:30 Eastern time against Colombia in the second leg, then they're not in the Olympics. And I don't say this in a bad way to the women's team, but I you'd be resigned to just having the women as an option. I'd like both in the Olympics this summer. And if the U.S. loses, you'll know you're – not only that, you're out 10 games of qualifying.
Yeah.
10 nights out.
We get Copa America still.
They're going to get murdered. They're going to get murdered.
Mm-hmm.
That said, they are a much better team. I think this game comes at a very bad time, because if you're using Beisler, who I don't love, but Beisler and Brooks, you can – then maybe the Cameron experiment on the right side. I think Klinsmann wedded himself to that. Mm. He wedded himself to the concept.
With a D, not a T.
Wed with a D, yes.
Okay.
He married himself to the concept of Cameron at right back. And when Brooks and Beisler went down, his thought was, well, I have to keep Jeff at right back. No, you don't, buddy.
Yeah.
So if you plug them in the middle and Cameron at right back, Castillo actually was one of the few players who did a decent job. He poor job adjusting on the first corner kick, and that's a pretty big deal.
Did you give him a 5 or 6 or something like that?
Five or six, yeah. Because
yeah.
I thought he was solid beside that. But this is just simple positioning. Even the players on the field are are an improvement, and that's just remarkably frustrating to think that if these players were played in their proper spot, the U.S. wins. And there's also a bit of an Arsene Wenger quality to this, the overstating of the opponent, the we control our own destiny. You heard the commentator say a bunch of times, well, I know the U.S. would just like to win these 2 games and then be able to experiment a little bit in September. Right. Well, here's the problem. When you don't win one of them, that second one becomes pretty dire.
I'm kind of 2 minds. I think the U.S. soccer really needs a wake-up call here. And if missing a World Cup cycle is what gives that wake-up call and creates an overhaul, because the U.S. is not playing very good soccer. I mean, mm-hmm. let's face it, there's not a lot of talent here. We're not developing talent. I think maybe I'm not looking at it as rosily as you are in terms of what the future holds, because, I mean, maybe I spent watching the U-23s get outpossessed 75-25 to Colombia mm-hmm. Just a couple hours before, you know, the U.S. game. So I'm not as hopeful in terms of, oh, we're starting to develop these really good players. And I don't know when do you think Klinsmann's job as technical director in developing a style of play and bringing up players is really going to show its face?
That almost takes a generation.
Right. So, I mean, it's hard, but at least the signs now are that nothing is really getting better.
Yeah.
Because you can't evaluate him on that because the people are 12 years old.
I think that's mostly fair. Now, he takes over 2 years before the World Cup, so it's a 2012. Mm-hmm. So he's had these players in for half a decade. Is the quality of player now another part of it is with him as technical director is his connections and where these players end up. You see Jurgen Klopp going after Bobby Wood at Liverpool reportedly.
Right.
You know, we've seen some things like this, his convincing of Jerome Kiesewetter to come and play for the U-23s. Mm-hmm. Obviously you've also got Brooks and
Danny Williams, Fabian Johnson, all those guys.
Yeah, there's another guy I'm that's in the Brooks camp that I'm forgetting about. But I believe that
they're Terrence Boyd.
What's that? Terrence Boyd.
He fell off.
He's been hurt. This is another point to make, and this is in defense of Klinsmann without being in defense of Klinsmann on Friday night because he shouldn't lose that game. But they're without three forwards they would have liked to had plenty of looks at, and that's Aaron Johansson's been shut down through probably the Copa America. Oof. He won't play for Werder Bremen again this year.
That's right.
Josh Gatt, who they were high on, hasn't played for Mold. Is it Moldy or Mold?
Probably Mold.
Yeah. I think the E is silent.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll ask Rudy if and when he calls.
Or Schieber,
yeah. It's his job on the show, Mike. Michael, text us. And Terrence Boyd. Who was, I mean, I don't think anybody thought he was going to be a superstar, but he was promising in his own right.
And he was a kind of forward that the U.S. didn't really have. I mean, he's sort of like Johansson and Altidore in that regard, but
he's a little bit of a bigger Bobby Wood.
Yeah, I think so. I feel like he's a little bit more mobile than the two guys that I just mentioned.
Yeah, and Bobby Wood got no service the other night as well. Mm-hmm. So there are three forwards there. I mentioned Brooks being out. I mentioned Beisler having, you know, not making that place here. Morris almost certainly may have played over Wood, but he was down with the U-23s. Mm-hmm. Matt Miazga was down with the U-23s. Tim Parker was the best player, I thought, in that game.
Yeah, and that's not even your Whitecaps bias speaking. That was actually
no,
true.
I thought it was very good. Maybe it's my NPSL bias, you know, I thought he was phenomenal in that game, one of the few true bright spots. A lot of people are going to want to say Luis Gil, but I thought for every great moment he had a bad one.
I don't really like Luis Gil. We can talk more about this. Sure. I mean, we can go into the U-23s.
We might have to. Yeah, we might have to at this point. Let's talk a little bit about that. So if you don't know, the United States, we would like to see them play men's soccer in the old Olympics in Brazil. And they whiffed on qualifying. Well, they didn't whiff. The last time they whiffed on qualifying. This time they're in a playoff spot, which I suppose if this were another sport like gymnastics and you were a gymnast and you're like, you know what, you can still make it, then you say you just got to get in. So they scored early against Colombia the other night, and then I don't even want to say batten down the hatches. They had some timely interceptions and drew 1-1. They take away that road goal, though, which is absolutely massive because – frankly, you've now watched this game more than one time, or at least one and a half times.
Yeah, maybe one and a quarter, but yeah.
How many out-and-out scoring chances do you feel Colombia straight-up missed?
Oh, man, like between 8 and 10.
That many? Okay, I thought it was more between 4 and 5.
No, I mean, good chances, like sitters, or are we talking
Well, now we're going to have to get into defining sitters, but
yeah, that's true.
I would say a chance that 7 times out of 10 you expect to go in.
Okay, I'd say like 5.
5?
Yeah.
Okay. And I thought that number for the United States was maybe 2 or 3. Morris, where?
I think that's generous.
Morris, if he uses his left foot.
Yeah, okay.
That's a goal.
Yeah. But there's a couple plays in the first half where they're like, there's a Columbia guy at the back post, and all he's got to do is just dive and get contact on the ball and put it on frame.
He missed
a
on a slide as well.
Yeah, that's the one we're talking about.
The same play, yeah.
And like Quintero is so good. You know, he put guys in good positions over and over and over again, you know, where they have space inside the 18-yard box to take a shot at goal. And for Quintero, he was relying on his teammates, and I think at times his teammates let him down, you know, in the finishing touch.
Sure.
And but still, they were absolutely dominant.
What's funny for me is Pulisic, who we will talk about in a little bit, from Borussia Dortmund, has the flu, so he can't partake in the U.S. camp. Now he's been called up for the second leg, the senior camp. But if they weren't trying to get him tied in because he has Croatian citizenship, and for those of you who aren't familiar, you can represent a national team pretty much as many times you want if it's in friendlies.
Yeah,
Not as many times as you want, but these World Cup qualifiers are a chance to tie him it's a meaningful cap tie. And I think that in this incident, they would rather have had Pulisic down with the U-23s, but they're trying to get him tied in.
I had some problems with Andy Herzog's, I guess, in addition to what Klinsmann's issues were. I think Herzog faced the same issues.
I was going to say he has the flip issues, but go ahead and...
Well, I mean, I think the issues were in lining up. If he knew that he was going to end up conceding possession and they played as if they were going to concede possession,
sure,
then why do you have very, very soft midfielders there?
Well, why are you starting? I think they were trying to clog the middle. Trapp, right. I thought, had a horrible game.
Right, you can clog the middle, but fill it with harder guys than Will Trapp and Emerson Hyman and those guys. I mean,
they played narrower than I thought, which is a prettier way of putting it.
Yeah.
But what I thought was for the first 20 minutes, and again, I haven't had a chance to watch the game again, but I thought for the first 20 minutes that kind of screwed up Colombia. Mm-hmm. I think it's the main reason that they got their counter, which, if you remember, is Rodriguez coming very wide down the right side before he cuts that ball in from the end line.
Yeah.
And they probably shouldn't have gotten that goal because the number six, the guy who eventually gets subbed off.
Yeah.
If you watch it replay that goal, he's basically walking back to Mark Gill, who then still barely scores. So yeah, I'm not a huge fan of him as well, but he had some very good moments. He also had some very poor ones. Trapp was terrible, I thought.
And I'm glad you agree with me on that one, because he fits well in a team like Columbus, where you know that they're going to possess the ball a lot, and that really is his skill set. You know, he connects very well with the midfield. He can play a long ball to the forwards. He's very cerebral, but he's not going to win a ton of tackles.
No.
And when he's in a position in Colombia where he has guys running at him all game long.
Colombia, they looked like men. I mean, those were some big guys.
But why aren't you starting like Alache or Alashi? I mean,
I don't know if he's dinged up a little bit or not. I don't, because I don't understand why they wouldn't start him. He's pretty much a fixture for them.
And Kiesewetter too. Put Kiesewetter on the wing and pull Polster inside. Polster's going to win a lot more tackles than Will Trapp is going to win tackles. And you're not giving up a lot in terms of possession that way either. Yeah, you're not going to build an attack, but you're not playing a style of the game. You've already conceded possession. So
yeah, Polster is so versatile as well.
But he's not a left wing either. Sorry. I'm starting to get worked up here.
We'll get to a little bit more of that. We have some guests coming as well. DK telling us to take a break, so we will. Back in a minute here on the Football Club of Buffalo show. Welcome back, WBNY, here in the Buffalo State Studios. You should see this mural they have of the Game of Thrones characters here.
It's on a little tilt. Astoundingly, very postmodern.
Astoundingly lifelike mural. Painted by some artistic genius. Nick Mendola and Ben Tsujimoto here. I like to talk about the studio because it's fun to be in here.
It's cozy.
Tons to talk about. Rudy Pompert still set to join us. He is here. He is not here in the building, but here on the line. And we'll get him in quickly here before we talk to Sean Burke. Rude dude, how are you?
I am great. I dozed off a little bit on the couch, otherwise I would have called you guys earlier.
clearly. So you guys, you are the director of everything, pretty much, at the Delaware Soccer Club, and you are fresh back from overseas. Mm-hmm. And first of all, before we get into why you were over there, I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about a current event, and that is one of your all-time heroes passing away, Johan Cruyff.
Yes. Yeah, that was big. On the day that we left, Thursday, when we arrived in Toronto at the airport, my cell phone blew up, of course, and the legendary Johan Cruyff passed away. You know, who for soccer, of course, put us in the map as a country in the late '60s and then throughout the '70s and the '80s. So there was a huge, huge loss and a great impact, of course. You know, it's just also cultural. just a huge person for us. So that was, yeah, it was very sad and very quick. He had cancer, and last week or about 2 weeks ago that he still said that he was leading 2-0 at halftime. You know, never really talked about his how things were going, and all of a sudden it was over. It was shocking. Yep.
Rudy, Ben Tsujimoto asking you the next question. What kind of a reaction was there once you got over in the Netherlands to Johan Cruyff passing? There must have been some kind of, there must have been some things you noticed that probably touched you.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because you know, besides, you know, obviously we know how great of a soccer player was, how great of a coach he was. I mean, he changed soccer. There's nobody been in the last 50 years who has changed soccer so much as Johan Cruyff. But he was also a little bit of a you know, controversial person, you know, there were also, you know, quite a few people that, you know, were not really a big fan, but more of the person Johan Cruyff, and that all disappeared, you know, because that's not important. You know, those details about, you know, how he, you know, sometimes could be incredibly stubborn and hard for his, you know, opponents and stuff. You know, opponents more like, you know, how Ajax was, you know, had to be run, and people who were not with him were against him, and he would make sure that they were dumped in the club and stuff like that. So he was, you know, very hard in that way too. But, you know, once, you know, when he passed away, that was really not important anymore, because of his legacy is all about, you know, what he did for us as a soccer player, as in, you know, for our country and you know, for soccer, and, you know, as an iconic figure, obviously. So, you know, that was all gone. You know, that was, okay, that's not important. You know, it was what is important is what he did for us, you know, throughout the world. So that was very interesting, I thought.
For sure. Rudy Pomper joining us, the director of soccer at Delaware Soccer Club. And I would encourage anybody out there who wants to learn a little bit more about Cruyff and Dutch soccer. There's a great book from the about really starting in the 70s called Brilliant Orange, one of my favorite ones, and it's definitely worth a read. But speaking of Holland, well, not Holland. Rudy, you and I have had this discussion many times. The Netherlands.
Yep.
Holland is a district, right, around Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And you had it over there with U12s or U11s?
Yes.
U12s.
Yeah, we had like a select team from our U11s and U12s, our boys team, and we went over there, yes.
And I know that you went, you got a great partnership with Pek Zwolle,
mm-hmm.
And they had come here and run a camp last summer, which I know some of our players from some FC Buffalo were you know, honored enough to help your coaches instruct. But this was kind of the return leg. You guys played and practiced in their match day stadium. You went to a game. You met with the same coaches that they saw here this summer. And that had to just be what an incredible experience to be an 11 or a 12-year-old kid and have that.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. So we arrived on Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, Pek Zwolle played against Willem II. It was a good game, full stadium. You know, Pek Zwolle is still in the hunt for a playoff spot for the Europa League. Willem II is kind of fighting against relegation. So it was an important game. And, you know, for most of our kids, that was a real, you know, first professional soccer game. So that was on Saturday night. And then on Sunday afternoon, we practiced in the stadium. Our kids got to practice in the stadium with the coaches that, you know, that were here last summer for our camp. And then on Monday night, Monday afternoon in the stadium, we played against Pek Zwolle's U11 team, and also, you know, also in the stadium. So yeah, that was absolutely fantastic experience for our kids.
How many coaches did you bring along, Rudy? It seemed like there was a bit of a staff that went along with you.
Yeah. We had a big group. We had three coaches: Tony Cristiano, Nate Wood, myself. President went with us, and then all the kids, all the players, brought either one parent or two parents. Some kids even brought another sibling. So we had a group of about 35 people, and they really got to experience, you know, how it is to play soccer in the Netherlands, how to be, you know, in a soccer country, you know, in a place where soccer is really the most important sport. and it was just absolutely fantastic. The place where we stayed was a former field hockey facility, and they turned the locker rooms into dorm rooms. So that's where we stayed, and it was about a 10-minute walk from Peck Swola. So, you know, we walked there, you know, for the practices and the games, and between the stadium and the place where we stayed, that 10-minute walk, we passed three or four more other soccer clubs. We probably walked past about, you know, 20 other soccer fields. And,
wow,
you know, so the kids and the parents could really see, you know, this is soccer country, you know, and really experience that. So that was fantastic, you know.
Well, for those of you who don't know, Rudy actually used to coach here at Buffalo State. That's where I first met him when I was finishing up school, and he was getting the men's program on the up and up. And I remember meeting him then, and we would end up having a lot of discussions since then, because Rudy likes to talk of the game, and if you love the game, he'll talk the game with you.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the things you've always been big about is going to see games in person. And even when you just took over at Delaware, you know, you guys would take trips, you'd take people mm-hmm. up to see Toronto FC. One way to make sure you never lose a kid as a soccer enthusiast is to put him into that climate with, you know, 15, 20, 25,000 people going nuts, because mm-hmm. it's the same way that for a hockey fan here, going to a Sabres game is going to firmly entrench that sport into his DNA. And that's a big, big part of it. It's really almost, again, I know you're a big proponent of it, you can't underestimate how big that is.
No, you have to. You know, like, of course, that's a big advantage if you're crazy about hockey as a kid. You can go to Sabres game. You can follow it. It's on the TV all the time. You know, and one of our goals as a soccer club is that our kids become soccer fans for life, that they really become little footballers and not kids that, you know, play baseball or hockey or football, and then soccer is that afterthought. We really try to, you know, make them real footballers. And when you go to games like that, you know, it gets in you, and then you see the whole excitement, and then how people get into it, and how, you know, how enthusiastic everybody is, and, you know, then that flame starts burning. And if you ask some of the kids, do what do you think was the greatest thing of the trip, they said, oh, the game on Saturday night. You know, that for them, that was the big thing, to see that game and to be in a stadium, you know, and with 15,000 people who are very, you know, going kind of nuts the whole time. And it's just fantastic, you know, and that gets that flame going, you know. And so that is very important. You know, that love for the game is growing then, and you keep them, and then they want to play more. And when I was a kid, we used to go to a soccer tournament in Germany, in Bremen.
Mm-hmm.
And they took us to see Werder Bremen. Well, up till now, every Saturday, I look up what Werder Bremen did.
Yeah.
Because we were there, I was there 35 years ago, and you still follow them.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you're in a stadium like that, you know. So that's the cool part, and we were just very happy that we could show our kids that, you know. So
Rudy, finally, we definitely want to ask you, I know that you had some pretty cultural moments while you were over there. Tell us a little bit about what the kids were exposed to.
Well, we went to, on the Tuesday that we were there, we went to Amsterdam. We went to the Anne Frank House. Before we left for the Netherlands a couple of weeks ago, we met with a lady, Mrs. Pfeffer, from the Holocaust center here in Buffalo. And, you know, she talked to our boys, who are all in the age of 11, 12 years old, and they all read the Anne Frank diary. So we kind of tried to do a little bit more than just playing soccer. So on that Tuesday, we went to the Anne Frank House. You know, it was a great experience for the kids to see, you know, how, what a space. And, just a fantastic to do something else too, you know. That was great, you know. Did a little bit of extra too.
All right, thank you so much for joining us today, Rudy. That's awesome what you're doing. Obviously an incredible experience for the kids, and you know, I know everybody can get on Facebook and Twitter and follow along with what mm-hmm. Delaware Soccer Club's up to.
Yeah, thank you very much. And you know, if there's anything else, you know, give me a call.
You know, buddy, we definitely will. Rude
All
Pompert,
right.
former Dutch international, well, still a Dutch international, but played in, played in the World University Games here in Buffalo as a goalkeeper. And obviously, as I've always said, if you just give a man an accent, you know, he's going to really enjoy his time in a foreign country.
He is the most pro-Dutch person that I've ever met. And it's funny because he...
Yes, that's true.
Well, no, it's crazy because, like, anytime he has an opportunity to talk about it, he'll talk about it and he'll get really
with
excited
passion.
About it. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
He's hosted a couple trivia nights in Meske. And
there's always a couple Dutch questions that no one knows. And he looks at you like, how?
Yeah.
How is no one getting this?
It's like they're super obscure too, but it's just like, oh yeah, you know, that's not part of your soccer knowledge.
Sorry that my knowledge base on third string Feyenoord goalkeepers isn't as high as you. No, and he's an asset to the community, that's mm-hmm. for sure. Before we hear from Sean Burke, I did want to get back into the Andy Herzog thing real quickly. So what I like about what I hate about Klinsmann is tactically naive. It feels that he's never making an adjustment that is a step ahead inside the game. You know, maybe his substitutions are good, but you don't see, wow, the formation was well adjusted to counteract that. Herzog, again, I thought came out there, but once Colombia adjusted to the trap he had set, he's like, well, what are we going to do now? Let's ride it out for the next 70 minutes. And Colombia was just, I mean, pardon the parlance of slang here, but I thought they were just beasting. Faster, bigger, stronger, smarter, everything. And to come out of that with any sort of advantage is still pretty big for the United States.
It is, but I mean, time and time again, we see U.S. youth teams having to basically concede possession and concede chances to most other countries that they play. And it's really frustrating to see that. And just to hear heading into that match that U.S. was going to essentially concede the majority of the play to essentially bunker down, you know, mm-hmm. and getting the goal allowed them to do that, like you said. But it was a lot of frantic defending, like the amount of partial-headed clearances that Tim Parker and Miazga had. Mm-hmm. And there were just a lot of, like, a couple more bounces go Colombia's way. It's a 4-1 game, and then there's
Absolutely.
No talk about Olympics at all. So I think the U.S., did they deserve the result? I don't know. I guess so. But I feel like their fortune was on their side, too, and I don't know if it will be on Tuesday night.
It's going to be nuts. At the same time, it's not like what we're seeing with Guatemala having to come up from, again, I looked up the weather. It's going to be 75 or something like that on Tuesday night in Guatemala City. It's going to be about 45 at kickoff in Columbus. So that's a significant advantage, especially if Columbus can get, that stadium can get pretty windy.
Yep.
But, you know, they're going up from 92 degrees to probably what's going to be 70 degrees in Dallas.
In Frisco, yeah.
Everybody's going to think that's a better move. So I think they've got a good chance to come out of it and go to the Olympics. But
really?
Yeah, wow. I do. I'm not favoring them. I just think they have a good chance.
If you had to predict a score, what would you predict?
2-1. It's hard for me to imagine either team won't score. I think Jordan Morris had a bad game, frankly.
He had a mixed game. He had very bright moments, and he also had some moments like, is this your first time playing striker kind of moments?
Yeah,
but
precisely.
But some of the
I still can't
he
believe
create,
he doesn't have a left foot.
Yeah, that does. I mean, there's been a lot of good players on the world
to
stage.
To completely
that,
pass up left-footed shots is frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even I would have taken one. Not at that level, because they would have not let me near
but
the pitch.
But would it have been good?
No, but I would have tried. So Nick Mandola here along with Ben Tsujimoto. We have another guest lined up, and we're very excited to talk with the women's coach from the University at Buffalo, Mr. Sean Burke. Sean, how's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Are you tanned right now?
No, it was not as sunny as hot as people might have think. It was mid to low 50s most of the time and overcast.
Okay, well, there's a little bit of a bummer, but still an incredible experience. So for those who don't know, the University at Buffalo women's soccer team really made it 2-for-2 for their programs. The men went over to England, and clearly Sean, in a much smarter move, thinking it would be warmer, chose Spain. And tell us a little bit about how this came about, you know, how it went off, and, you know, just give us the history of the trip.
Yeah, well, you're right. Did think it was going to be a little bit warmer while we were there. But no, really, you know, we had kind of, like you said, with the men's, proposed this idea of kind of fundraising and getting these trips overseas, just knowing how valuable it can can be for the program, the experience, the exposure, recruiting. You know, we kind of talked about a timetable, and when he had brought this all to attention, I had just taken over as head coach, so kind of went with the impression that maybe we would go the next year. We just kind of looked at the different possibilities, and, you know, we've had some ties in England and Ireland with recruiting, and hadn't really been over to Spain yet, and obviously appreciate their style of play, so thought it would just be a great overall experience, and intrigued with the language as well.
Sean, you visited, I think, Barcelona and Valencia, is that right?
Three cities, actually. So we did 3 days in Barcelona, 2 days in Valencia, and then we ended 2 days in Madrid.
Okay. So I heard you got to check out Camp Nou, actually, the outside of it once, and then you got a pretty full-scale tour of it. What was it like checking out Barcelona's facilities?
You know, we got to see both with Real Madrid as well during the trip. Ooh. And you're just blown away with the history of the club. Both have elaborate museums that are decorated with trophies and all the history and the great players that have come through there. And it's hard just not to be blown away in awe and, you know, try to take as many pictures as you can. And sometimes it just doesn't do it justice. But knowing, you know, arguably the greatest players of our lifetime, you know, get to play in this week in and week out, and you're standing right there, it's a pretty surreal feeling.
What were the highlights for you and, I guess, for the team as a whole?
I think for, you know, we've had a chance to, you know, follow up with a lot of the players and things like that and the coaching staff as well. I think most of us enjoyed Valencia the most. You know, we're just there a short time for 2 days. It's much smaller, more quaint city, but they had one of their largest festivals going on during our stay there, which was just, it was unbelievable how crowded the streets were. How high-spirited everyone was. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and there's an elaborate fireworks show going off that it's just the atmosphere and the energy around that town when we were there. It's just hard to describe. But I think a lot of the girls really took away that being the best part of the trip. And then we also, our last game against Villarreal, 1-1 tie, was just an amazing experience for our players, getting to do the jersey exchange, which, you know, was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and the friends they made. And you know, it really, the whole trip was worth it when you saw the interaction of the two teams for about 30 minutes after our game, our last night in Valencia, and made the trip real special.
You know, I have a question about that, and it's kind of amazing. I can remember a time in my life when we were scheduling a team to come over from overseas, and you never know quite how you're going to match up. Were there some nerves that, you know, this is Villarreal, what if they outclass us, etc.? How did you feel about going into the game, and then to get a result like that, even in a friendly, so to speak, is, I mean, it's eyebrow raising. It's incredibly impressive, Sean.
Yeah, you know, obviously going into it, you see the name Villarreal, and right away, you know, I think you kind of take a step back all of a sudden, like, okay, what are we about to walk into? You know, with a club with so much history like that. But I think that's a lot about our team, and you know, we've shown already we're not really too shy to step up and play anybody. And I thought, regardless of the outcome, anybody we play over there, we're gonna get something out of it. We're gonna get value. And for us, you know, the Spanish style, just so technical, and everything's on the ground and defeat. You know, I think it was good for our girls to see, and I also think it was good that our girls played toe-to-toe with some of these fantastic players.
We're talking to Sean Burke here from UB Women's Soccer head coach. And it's, Sean, this is a cool experience both as a soccer player, but, you know, as a human being to sort of embrace a new culture. And I know probably some of the players on your team are pretty well-traveled, but others are probably seeing some of this, you know, Spain for the first time. What kind of cultural takeaways would you say there were?
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact we had one player, it was their first time ever on a plane. I'd say over half the team, first time outside the country. So I'd say that the cultural was probably the biggest impact that we had. You know, the language barrier, I know I struggled with it, but appreciate it. I think that it's as far as the country goes as a whole, they're more than accommodating. Almost everyone could have some sort of English. It made it easier for someone like me who really struggled with the Spanish.
Oh, Burke sounds Spanish. I kind of figured you were Spanish.
Yeah. Right. But it's great that you kind of have to, you know, engulf yourself in it, and you try all week long to use the language and participate. And I look back at it now, and I really wish I knew more. You know, Casey was a great example. I thought everyone on staff probably had the best understanding. So we were constantly looking for him for guidance. But what a great experience when it comes to that. And then just getting to see the three different cities. You know, it compared Madrid very much to New York City, what we got to see with that. And again, but a town like Valencia, we really got to see their heritage and where they come from. And, you know, the girls, you know, all day long, we had some training sessions and games, but they were off sightseeing, walking the town. We had a lot of time to really, you know, dive into the culture. And I think our girls were great with trying the food. and I think it was fantastic.
Casey Dirk as Renaissance man is something we're often talking about as well. Sean, you know, you've got a soccer mind here, so we want to pick your brain on it while it's here. Have you been paying attention to the United States and what's been going on under Jurgen Klinsmann? And you have any thoughts going into tomorrow night?
To be honest, I've probably been following it from an outsider as of late.
Okay.
You know, obviously, like I said, I didn't get a chance. I have seen the highlights of the last performance. You know, maybe it's the defender in me. You know, I would be the first to say that I was one of the biggest proponents of Klinsmann. I thought he had a great philosophy, and you know, I was excited to see. I thought the U.S. was going to turn a corner, mm-hmm. And go that way. I haven't seen it personally. My biggest question marks for me is how are we going to defend teams? You know, and we've always taken on the philosophy, you don't concede goals, you're always going to give yourself a chance to win. That worries me and I'm a massive U.S. soccer fan. Mm-hmm. You know, I probably support them more than any club team in the world. So it's a little nerve wracking, thinking about how we're going to solve some issues in the back. And again, I'd love to see us embrace more of a style than, you know, obviously it's great to have the blue collar work hard till the end, but I think we're evolving as a country, and I think our soccer should be evolving with it. And I just worry sometimes we take some steps back.
Sean, how huge of a setback is it if the U.S. doesn't qualify for the World Cup this cycle?
It's big enough that I haven't taken the time to think about it yet.
I know it's a tough question, but I figured.
You're saying it out loud, it's scary to think about. I mean, I remember, like I said, growing up in the 80s and early 90s, and you'd see one game on TV a year, and it would be the U.S., and they cut away for commercials, and chances are you'd miss a goal. The fact that soccer's on every single day now, and it's an educated fan base now as well.
Yeah, I think it would be I think it'd be catastrophic. I mean, I think that's
absolutely. It would be. That's the best word to say.
It's almost
that's
unfathomable.
The best way to describe it.
Yeah, and at this stage, but let's you know what? Look, it was mostly we talked about some positive stuff, Sean, and we'll have to. We're going to get you on the horn again in August to get ready for the season, and we really appreciate what you're doing over there at UB, and thanks for calling in, man.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Sean Burke from UB Women's Soccer. Yeah, that's totally the word. I'm always careful. Like we talk a lot at our board meetings, our staff meetings for Pro Soccer Talk. You don't use words like tragedy to say something that doesn't involve people dying.
Stay away from the war metaphors.
Right, but catastrophic, meaning, you know, great detriment and change. Missing out on a World Cup would be absolutely laughable. When you're a program that likes to talk itself up as someone that can beat European teams and, you know, I mean, forget about the idea of fusing with CONMEBOL. Like, this is this is embarrassing.
There's a lot of world soccer minnows here in CONCACAF.
So. Yeah. I mean, as it stands, I think they have a decent chance of finishing last in their Copa America group. Ugh. So to not have the World Cup to... yeah, it's unbelievable. In the fourth round, not in the hex.
I feel kind of bad for asking that question because I feel like it really is kind of put a haze or put a damper on this whole show.
I'll tell you what we'll be talking about next Monday and maybe the Monday after that if the U.S. lose tomorrow. I mean, it's shocking. It would be beyond shocking. Mm-hmm. However, if they win tomorrow, they're pretty much going to go through to the hex. No, I mean, that's crazy to think about.
Right.
If they
mm-hmm.
win tomorrow, yep. they leapfrog Guatemala and their next game will be against St. Vincent. And the Grenadines, and they'll have likely 10 points after that. They beat St. Vincent 6-1 in the fall, mm-hmm. so they would have 10 points Trinidad would have 10 points, and Guatemala would have at most, they would be going, I'm sorry, Trinidad would be going into that with 10, and Guatemala would be going into that 6, and only one team can take 3. So they basically through if they win tomorrow. They're basically out if they lose.
But the fact that we're even having this discussion right now, the U.S. shouldn't have trouble until the hex.
No, but they did have trouble last time around. They have stumbling blocks given usually the refereeing and the dimly lit venues.
Right, the venues I remember watching quite a few of those qualifiers.
Knee-length grass.
Last year at Meskay and just marveling at how, like,
it's very
how different a soccer pitch can be somewhere.
Yeah. It's not unfathomable, unfortunately, but last time around, they needed to go to the last day before clinching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last time under Bob Bradley, they cruised, but the time before that, it was tricky as well. So I'll say this, if they lose tomorrow, Ben, and Klinsmann is fired.
You'll shave your head.
No,
you will post a silly dance on Twitter.
I'll post. No, I don't mean anything like that. I mean, who? I was going to ask you a question. If they lose tomorrow, who would you, driver's seat, who are you picking to coach the United States?
Fool. You know, it's funny. There's a lot of talk of what to do with Jurgen, but not a whole lot. Like, this guy's an obvious successor. You know?
Right.
And I've heard things as bizarre as, like, Jason Kreis. Mm. And maybe that's not bizarre. I don't know.
It's got to be somebody who can focus on the job. I mean, Conte is talking about that, the Italian coach. Mm-hmm. He couldn't do the international team anymore because he needs to be involved in a game every week, every other week, and it drove him nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just heard the worst thing you could do is let the media decide.
Right.
Because
yeah.
I just keep hearing, you know, Jesse Marsh had one great year at New York Red Bulls. Let's entrust him with the keys to the national team.
Right.
Which isn't to say he wouldn't do a tremendous job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I want to think beyond him and Caleb Porter because they had good years next year. And Greg Berhalter, who did have a great year, is interesting because he's gone overseas. I would be – it's never going to happen, but I would actually take Bradley back given the experiences he's had now and see what kind of a different coach he is.
It would never be accepted.
It's not going to happen.
That's a PR nightmare.
No, I'm just saying if he came back, I wouldn't be super angry about
right.
it.
You might be in the minority about that, but
yeah, I've heard Oscar Pereira.
Yeah.
Do
you think it should be an older coach, just given that? See, I would err towards a younger somebody in maybe their 30s and 40s would be my goal. Somebody who has a very good understanding of the modern soccer game, and somebody who I don't feel like having a ton of hindsight is very important here. I think having a very good knowledge base of where the game is now and where opposing countries are now.
Yeah, maybe this will be a lead into next week because we're going to hit the break, but I'll tell you this. I would want an older guy with managerial experience, so someone that is going to walk into that room and everyone's going to say, shh, so-and-so is about to talk. Mm-hmm. Carlo Ancelotti, Manuel Pellegrini, somebody who has done it as a manager. Klinsmann has done some things as a manager, Germany, Bayern Munich, but at the same time, he's viewed as a player. I want a guy who, when, and not that Jeff Cameron is a rabble rouser, but when Jeff Cameron walks into the manager's office, he has to think to himself, I'm about to talk to Carlo Ancelotti. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this guy knows what he's doing. So experience is a big one for me. I don't want a young gun. I don't want a guy who's going to, I also don't want a guy who's going to be committed too much to Europe or too much to MLS. So I'm asking a lot, Ben. I want the job is what I'm saying.
We're right up against it.
Let's go right now before I think we're going to talk about the other football, right? Is that what's going on next?
Yeah, we go to that good old egg ball, as you call it.
I've never actually called that except on the air to you, Derek.
Yes,
Sign exactly. Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod Taylor will lead us to the World Cup.
We got mock drafts going on.
That sounds awful. I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding. The mock drafts are tough when the Bills are drafting 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Joey Borsa.
But I will listen on the way home. Excited. See you guys later.
See you guys later.
Yep.